Hello, friends, and welcome to Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm Dean Welty with Rita Dunaway, and we're going to take a bold leap into uncharted waters today. But before we start, I need to tell you that the views we are sharing with you today are strictly our own. They do not reflect the views of the Valley Family Forum or of any other organization to which we might belong. Now, with that out of the way, let's take our leap. We're going to begin with a quote from President Woodrow Wilson, who said, "A nation that does not remember what it was yesterday does not know what it is today, nor what it is trying to do." So, the question we're facing today, who were we, who are we, and what are we trying to do? Now, in previous programs, Rita and I have talked about America's godly heritage beginning over 400 years ago with the Pilgrims and the Puritans, and then setting the foundation with our founding fathers. That is what has made America such an exceptional nation. But does it still describe America today? To help answer that question, and here's our bold leap, Rita and I are going to compare the presidencies of Barack Obama and Donald Trump. Which one better reflects the heart and soul of America as one nation under God, past and present? But we're going to begin with some words of wisdom from our very first president about what was needed to make America great and make America good. In his farewell address of 1796, George Washington said that above all else, religion and morality are indispensable supports for our political prosperity. And then he also warned that no one could claim to be a patriot who worked to undermine these two great pillars of human happiness and the duties of all citizens. Let's keep those words in mind as we compare these two presidents, Obama and Trump, in their treatment of these two pillars and of their leadership of America. So, Rita, this is a challenge. How do we do this? How do we measure these two very different presidents?
Well, Dean, I certainly agree that George Washington set a very high standard, not only for our presidents, but for all of us as citizens. We do need to be grounded in the Judeo-Christian values of religion and morality, as well as in the constitutional principles upon which America was founded and has prospered. I hate when I look around today and feel like that has been lost, that there's such a lack of understanding of those principles. But to begin with for today, I think we need to look at how Presidents Obama and Trump have expressed their commitment to God and their understanding that He is the author of these two great pillars. After all, God is recognized in our Declaration of Independence, our Pledge of Allegiance, the National Anthem, and our national motto, In God We Trust. That is who we are as Americans, and we can't take it for granted. So one way of measuring Obama and Trump is to look at how they line up with these two pillars by the actions they've taken. As the Bible says, we shall know them by their fruits. For example, they should embrace the moral laws that are clearly outlined in the Bible, particularly in three areas that affect all of us: the sanctity of life, God's design for marriage and the family, and religious freedom. They should also carry out their constitutional duties in four other civic areas of responsibility that are listed in the preamble to the Constitution: establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, secure the blessings of liberty, and provide for our common defense and security. So, Dean, start us off with the 8 years of Obama's presidency and tell us how he measured up against our core Judeo-Christian values and constitutional principles. And we'll get to President Trump a little later for a comparison.
Well, Rita, that's a tall order. Eight
yeah.
years.
Yep.
But I'd like to start in the very middle of Obama's presidency was something that happened in 2012 at the Democratic National Convention when the delegates tried to remove God from the Democratic Party platform. Some people might say that's just a minor, trivial detail, but it's about God and our commitment to God that you've just described. Even though that vote ended in a virtual tie, the action itself sent shockwaves across America because it seemed to reflect Obama's personal indifference, and even his hostility toward a broad range of Judeo-Christian values. This could not have happened without his knowledge and his consent. But let's turn to these specific values that you talked about. And I think we have to start with life as really the most important value. Obama got off to a very bad start in 2009 by rescinding the long-standing pro-life Mexico City policy that bans federal funds from going to groups overseas that support abortion. This had stood for a long time, and he simply said, it doesn't matter, we can fund those groups. At that same time, he also refused to address the huge March for Life on the National Mall, or then to issue a presidential proclamation for Sanctity of Life Sunday, which previous presidents, starting with Ronald Reagan, and except for Bill Clinton, have done. It was a clear rebuke to everyone who believed in the sanctity of life as a core moral value. But then he continued with policies. Probably one of the biggest ones is under Obamacare, he attempted to force businesses and religious groups to include abortion in their insurance plans. Big examples were Little Sisters of the Poor and Hobby Lobby, and other groups persecuted those who refused to include abortion in their plans. And I think we can simply wrap this up because there are many more details that we could include. Obama continued to oppose every pro-life initiative and to defend abortion throughout his 8 years in office.
Well, I need to add one more thing to that, Dean, which is that Obama also rejected all the efforts to defund Planned Parenthood, which is the largest abortion provider in America. That amounts to $500 million per year of taxpayer money, our money, and Obama continued to defend it even after Planned Parenthood was exposed, as we all remembered, for selling baby parts. And finally, if there were still any doubts about his support for abortion, he was also scheduled to speak at Planned Parenthood's annual dinner in 2013, the first sitting president who would have done so. He ended up canceling at the last minute, we think because of the intense pressure he was getting from pro-life groups. So that's on life. Now, Dean, what did President Obama do on the issue of marriage?
There's a lot more we could say about his pro-abortion policies that really were hostile to the sanctity of life. But on marriage, the second big issue, because marriage and the family are really the basis of American culture and prosperity. So I would say we could start in 2008, even though Obama claimed to support natural marriage. Prior to his first election in 2008, in the very first months of his presidency, he later claimed under pressure from LGBT activists that he had evolved in his thinking and said that he now supported same-sex marriage. As a result of his personal endorsement, his Justice Department refused to defend the Defense of Marriage Act, commonly referred to as DOMA, that Congress had approved in 1996 with support from both parties. Defense of Marriage Act. His Justice Department even went further to argue that DOMA should be overturned. Well, not surprisingly, his decision led to the tragic Supreme Court decision in 2015 to recognize same-sex marriage. Rita, that was a decision that overturned marriage laws in over 30 states. Obama celebrated that Supreme Court decision that evening by bathing the White House in bright LGBT rainbow colors.
I remember that.
But his support, Rita, went beyond that. It also led to other attacks on core values. So help us understand that. How did that court decision affect, for example, our religious freedoms?
Yeah, so let's talk about religious liberty. And this is an area of great concern to me. You know, it wasn't surprising that the court's decision opened the door to numerous court battles between LGBT activists and people of faith who continued to believe what they had always believed, that God designed marriage to be only between one man and one woman. Sadly, Obama's support for what we hear referred to as LGBT rights, led to severe penalties on small business owners like a florist, a cake maker, a photographer, a printer, and many others who refused, as a matter of conscience, to participate in or endorse same-sex marriages and programs. And then, even going beyond that, Obama's attacks expanded to include other demands. For instance, that public schools allow students who identified as transgender, boys or girls, to use the restroom designated for the opposite sex, to use the locker rooms designated for the opposite sex. And the Obama administration actually threatened to withhold federal funds that failed to get on board with this brave new world kind of policy that anything goes when it comes to sex and gender.
Rita, I'm getting depressed all over again.
Yeah,
this was
I hear
a dark
you.
Period
it was, it
in
was
American
indeed.
Life. Okay, so we've covered the issue of life, of marriage, and religious freedom. But I know that you're also very concerned about constitutional principles. Those could involve particularly the rule of law, the abuse of government power, and activist judges. Where was Obama in all of that?
Well, this was a really disturbing aspect, I think, of his whole administration. You know, we so often now refer to his famous line about using his phone and his pen to basically achieve whatever he wanted to achieve through the federal government. But the one example, I think the one that was most disturbing to me, was his decision to fundamentally change immigration policy, specifically because Congress, the body that had the power to do so, refused to do so. So I'm talking, of course, about his DACA decision, the decision not to enforce the law with respect to children who had been brought here illegally by their parents. And I just want to be clear here. My issue is not with that policy. In fact, I've written and talked before about my support for that policy if it's implemented appropriately. My issue with it here is the rule of law, the separation of powers, because the president had no power to implement that policy. That job belongs to Congress.
And he admitted that himself, did he not? That he didn't have that authority.
Yeah. At one point he did.
Yes.
And then later he backpedaled on it when he thought that was the only way to get it done. Mm. And let's look at the courts, too. Under President Obama, activist judges continued to play a large role in undermining the structure set up by the Constitution. Not surprisingly, Obama appointed activist judges to the Supreme Court. Look at Sotomayor and Kagan, and many more federal judges to lower courts who supported his pro-abortion, pro-same-sex marriage, and LGBT policies. Do you have anything else to look at about Obama before we move on to talk about President Trump?
Well, yeah, just going on to his role as the executive branch of our government. Beyond these moral Judeo-Christian values that we've just talked about and then the rule of law, there are several other issues that reflect on a president's constitutional responsibility to provide for the common defense and for our security. On national security, now again, this really gets into executive powers and his responsibility for our security. As an example of what I think was a very poor judgment, he supported the radical Muslim Brotherhood government in Egypt. Euphemistically, they referred to as the Arab Spring, as though this was a great development. He was also reluctant to name or to confront radical Islamic terrorism at home or abroad. The result of these actions was to embolden terrorists both here and abroad and to put our national security at greater risk. Several other examples on national security I'll just mention briefly. His signature of the Iran nuclear accord, not to eliminate their nuclear weapon plan, but it simply put them on a glide path to developing it later on, let's say in about 10 years. And even though he did that, even though Iran was and continues to be a leading supporter of international terrorism, and another footnote to this, he allowed Probably more than, yes, I would not say probably, certainly, more than any other president, he allowed U.S. relations with Israel to deteriorate, even though Israel is one of America's closest allies. Now, just one more comment on energy security. And I know people will disagree with this who are more concerned about what they refer to as environmental issues. But on energy security for America, Obama refused repeatedly to approve the Keystone Oil Pipeline or to open up ANWR, the Alaska National Wildlife Refuge, for oil exploration, while at the same time imposing very strict limits on the coal industry. Again, this is a matter of judgment. I'm simply pointing out on this energy issue where he could have expanded our development and resources, he really put limits on them. Rita, I think that pretty well covers Obama. We're halfway into our program, more than that, actually. But before we move to Trump, let's pause here at the end of Obama's 8 years to remember where we all were. Hillary Clinton, for many of us, represented a leap into certain darkness with no hope because we knew that she would be continuing Obama's policies that were so hostile to our Judeo-Christian values. At the same time, we were concerned that Donald Trump had his own checkered past and lack of government experience. But despite that, he represented a leap into uncertain darkness, but with a glimmer of hope. Now, this goes back to these uncharted waters.
Yep.
So do you remember how you worked your way through that?
Oh, Dean, I remember being in a state of depression and disbelief at many points about what was happening. It was really discouraging to me, to be honest with you. I did not view Donald Trump as a champion of conservative values or even as a good role model. And that was really disturbing to me, the prospect of having someone like that in the presidency. I still don't view him as either of those two things. But as I sought to make the decision, because to me, not voting was not an option, as I worked my way through that, there were two factors that were predominant for me. One, the role of government. Which candidate had a more consistent view to mine of what is the role of government? Okay, not to mine, to that of the Constitution. You know, which candidate had a worldview of the role of government that lined up with the Constitution? That was the first one. The second one was all about the Supreme Court. I know how important it is. It is critical that we have good justices on the Supreme Court who understand that their job is to apply the Constitution as it was written, apply the words according to their meaning when they were written. We have just talked about some of the consequences of having a Supreme Court that has failed to do that. But then, Dean, looking beyond the candidates themselves, it was very helpful, too, to look at the stark differences between the two party platforms. And we've discussed that whole issue before. The Republican platform was clearly in strong support of the core moral values and principles that we've been discussing, while the Democratic platform was just as clearly hostile to many of them. And that made a big difference for me. But Dean, with that election behind us,
thank goodness,
let's take a look at what Trump has done during his first year in office on these same Judeo-Christian values and constitutional principles that we've just reviewed under Obama. How are they different?
Well, it's only been a year, Rita, so the last chapter has not been written. But I don't think anyone will be surprised to hear that there has been a 180-degree turnaround on almost every one of these core values and principles from what we experienced under President Obama. And let me give you just a couple of examples. On life, which we consider the most important of these, Trump immediately, as soon as he was inaugurated, reinstated the Mexico City policy that President Obama had just overturned and which bans federal funds for overseas groups that promote or provide abortion. Now, consistent with that, President Trump also ended U.S. funding for United Nations programs because of their support for abortion. I'm thinking of United Nations Population Fund specifically. He confirmed his support for life this year, again, with a live satellite speech at the big, huge March for Life last month, and then followed that up with a very strong presidential proclamation for Sanctity of Life Sunday, both of which Obama consistently refused to do during his 8 years. So, Rita, that's life. What about his impact on the courts, on religious freedom, and on the LGBT agenda?
Well, as promised, Trump appointed a strict constitutionalist to the Supreme Court in the form of Neil Gorsuch, along with many other like-minded judges appointed to lower courts, which contrasts starkly with the activist judges that Obama had always appointed. And I love that Trump ordered all departments to stop prosecutions of people for expressing their sincerely held religious beliefs on issues like life and marriage, which again contrasts with Obama's attacks on those freedoms. We're actually going to look at this issue very closely and extensively in an upcoming program, Dean. That's just a little teaser.
I can't wait.
Trump also just recently appointed Governor Sam Brown back as ambassador at large for an international religious freedom position, which had been relatively inactive under Obama. And then on the whole issue that I think is really about states' rights, Trump immediately reversed Obama's order for public schools in North Carolina and elsewhere to allow self-identified transgender boys to use girls' restrooms and locker rooms, and he reversed the threat that federal funds would be upheld if schools refused to comply with that. So, Dean, what about Trump's positions on the rule of law, national security, foreign policy, which you're an expert on, and your general assessment of Trump's actions so far?
Okay, Rita, we're getting there. On the rule of law, it was so refreshing that Trump has referred immigration reforms and responsibilities to the Congress for decision, where they belong, rather than acting by executive order as President Obama had done.
Yes.
That's the way it should be. However, on the issue of immigration itself, and for national security reasons, he has recommended stricter enforcement of immigration laws, along with tighter screening of refugees and of residents from high security risk countries, as well as his well-known plan for a border wall with Mexico. But Rita, here's what really blows all of us away. He has also just proposed expanding the path to citizenship for DACA and Dreamers, 1.8 million of those, which traditionally the Republicans have opposed, Democrats have called for. I just heard from a leader of the Hispanic National Religious Conference. He referred to it as a stupendous olive branch that means everything, particularly to the Hispanic community. This is a bold move on his part. You talk about a leap into uncharted waters. This is revolutionary. But just a couple of quick comments on our national security foreign policy. He's been much more aggressive in the battle against ISIS in Iraq. He's moved to restore closer relations with Israel, including plans to move the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem. He's reviewing the risky Iran nuclear accord, and he's challenging, rather than acquiescing to North Korea's nuclear provocations and threats. From my general assessment, Rita, it's really quite simple. We've covered a lot of ground, but there is no doubt that the Obama administration was very hostile, on the one hand, to our core Judeo-Christian values and principles. The last 8 years, and I'll be very clear and very candid, have been very difficult for many of us. It was like walking against gale force winds in our face with Obama's constant attacks on our godly heritage, our Judeo-Christian values, and our constitutional principles. In contrast, there is also no doubt that the Trump administration has been very supportive of these very same values and principles, and instead of a gale force wind in our face, we feel a gentle breeze at our backs for the first time since Obama took office 9 years ago. So having said that, Rita, if you want to get into this, Trump continues to run into criticism for his style, his sometimes crude language, and lingering questions about his moral character. So keeping that in mind, what is your overall assessment?
Well, it's difficult for me to say, Dean. I feel very torn in answering this question. On the one hand, I think he has made a lot of great decisions on public policy. He's made a lot of great changes, which we have just outlined. I have been very pleased with a lot of what he has achieved and accomplished and where things seem to be heading in many regards. However, on the other hand, I repeat that he is not someone I consider a role model or a strong champion of conservative values. And I am very concerned, Dean, that rather than elevating and refining our standards of decency and civility in America, he is lowering them. And that is a great disappointment to see.
Well,
how about you, Dean?
You know, it's interesting. I figured you might say that because you've written about this.
Yeah.
I ran across a quote yesterday that I find quite amusing. And let's see how you
respond
to it. It was written by a pastor named A.W. Pink. Here's what he said about this very issue. A wise man and woman will seek to profit from good advice, no matter who may proffer it or how unkindly it may be given. Should we refuse an important letter because we dislike the appearance or manners of the postman?
Okay. Here's another quote for you, Dean.
Okay.
Even a fool is thought wise when he keeps silent. So right back at you. I am not calling our president a fool, but if we're talking about quotes, there you go. And that, by the way, is from the book of Proverbs.
Well, that's a better authority. Rita, we're almost finished. But with regard to what can we do to help, I would just like to say one thing. There's a National Day of Prayer taking place again on May 3rd. The theme is Pray for America. Unity. And what it's talking about, we are a divided nation right now, but this is something we can all do. Pray every day for unity in America during these difficult times so that we can come together once again as one nation under God.
Absolutely. And I want to just add my voice to that sentiment and make a personal appeal to everyone who's listening today. We need to pray for our president and for all of our government leaders. Let's make sure we are not neglecting to do that.
And for we the people,
yeah,
that we can be engaged in every way possible in a positive way.
Yes. Well, that's it for today. For our listeners, thank you so much for joining us on this journey in time, reviewing where we've been under President Obama and where we may be going with President Trump, and what we can all do together to help make America good again. If you'd like to listen to this program again or share it with your friends, go to our website at valleyfamilyforum.org and click on the link to Crossroads on the homepage. We want to thank our generous sponsors at Blue Ridge Chimney Services and the dental practice of Scott Dunaway. And we thank so many of you for your prayers, encouragement, and financial support. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation to help keep Crossroads on the air, you can do so by check to Crossroads at P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg, 22803. I'm Rita Dunaway with Dean Welty and engineer Robbie Meadows, inviting you to join us again next week at the Crossroads where faith and culture meet.
Rejoice, 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 rej